I would like you to, everyone, if they would stand, and we're going to do something a little different this morning. So that's everyone. And here's what I'd like you to do. Just in the name of the Lord, just greet someone different than your family. Just and tell them one great thing the Lord has done this week that you've seen and witnessed, whether it's in your life or someone else's life. So just greet someone. All right, well, as we finish up here, it's all right, we had a little extra time, Lee, right? What I'd like to do before you sit down, so this morning I do not have PowerPoint, as I just really wanted to take a break once I got to the weekend and just relax. It was a busy week, it was great, but it's a great busy tired. Is that the way you describe it, Amal? Exciting, tiring, all that. So, but here's what I want you to do and think about this is, so we're looking at Luke 8, 40 through 56. There'll be no PowerPoint. That gives me a little flexibility. And I'll tell you why it does is because there's always things that pop in my mind. And sometimes I feel like I've got to stay to the script because there's certain things I've put up there on PowerPoint. So it gives me a little flexibility. But I want you to think about this. When we read about these miracles we're going to read about, and I titled this Learning from Two Healings, but I'm going to promise you this, and this is the way the Gospels work. There are multiple healings that go on during this period of time, but the authors choose to highlight, I say the authors because here it's Luke, but also we have Matthew, Mark, and we have John. But they're choosing to highlight certain healings. And so then you've got to ask yourself, as we read through this morning, this is what I want you to consider. We have two healings that were going on, not quite simultaneously, obviously, but back to back, real close. There were other things going on, but these two are highlighted. So we've got to ask, why? Why is it just these two? I mean, there could have been more, but why these two? What does God want us to see, and what is Luke, not just Luke, by the way, it's Mark, it's Matthew. But what are they trying to point out with these two healings? What are the similarities? What are the differences? That's kind of what we want to do. And so as we go through, I want you to just, I don't know how to describe it better than just kind of read for not just the meaning, what's being said here, but read for insight. Like, what are we trying to learn through this? Because they seem like they're two totally different things, except with the commonality of Jesus, right? But I believe there's more. So with that in mind, let's jump into our passage. It's going to be Luke 8, 40 through 56, so basically the end. But we're going to start out, first of all, in verses 40 through 42 with a request. And so let's read this together in Luke chapter 8. And it says this, "And as Jesus returned, the people welcomed him, for they had all been waiting for him. And there came a man named Jairus, and he was an official of the synagogue, and he fell at Jesus' feet and began to implore him to come to his house. For he had an only daughter about 12 years old, and she was dying. But as he went, the crowds were pressing against him." So what are we told? This is when Jesus comes back from the other side of the sea. There's a crowd waiting. Now, what's worth noting is, why is there a crowd waiting? Well, on the one hand, Jesus was popular, but also, and you could say, well, they wanted to hear from him. Yes, but let's be honest, he was healing people. And that was a lot of the reason they were waiting. And as some people would say, you know, even as big as we talked about the Sea of Galilee and the size, you could see things and you could figure out, someone would probably figure out very quickly which boat Jesus was in. And by the way, we don't think it was just one boat that would accompany him at different times. There were sometimes a couple, two or three or more. But even so, even if it was just the one boat coming back, most likely as they got a little closer and closer, they were figuring it out. So by the time they show up, there's a crowd waiting. And in particular, we're told right away, even with the crowd waiting, there's an individual named Jairus. Now, what's special about him, are we told? He is the leader of the synagogue. And so because of he's the leader of the synagogue, would he know Jesus ahead of time? You know why? Because what did the leader of the synagogue do? Well, let's talk this through a little bit. This would be a man, he would be entrusted with looking after the building. There would be different roles if you think about kind of what was set up for synagogue worship. There would be the reading of scriptures, prayers. There would be preaching. As we know, and we see a lot of times, Jesus was definitely healing, but he was also going into the synagogues to do what? To teach, to preach. So he would, at the minimum, we know that Jesus would have probably been a casual acquaintance of Jairus, because why? Because that's who the man would be that he sees to set things up. But this time, this is no casual relationship. The situation is dire that we read about. Why? Well, because his 12-year-old daughter's got a problem. In fact, do you notice even the way he immediately before we're told what the problem was? It says he fell at Jesus' feet. Now, you say what you will about different positions, and we can say, well, the leaders in Jerusalem, they're more dignified. They've got better clout. But within the community, you have these synagogues, and because not everyone, you're not making the trek to Jerusalem all the time. If I said, hey, let's walk up to Omaha, anybody want to go do that? Not really, especially not in this heat, right? So you're not going to want to do that all the time. You don't have the time. So there's a purpose for the synagogue. However, in this particular case, this man, he would have some dignity, and yet he doesn't care because he falls before the feet of Jesus. And he asks Jesus to come to his house. He implores him. He needs help. He has a 12-year-old daughter. And the way it's pictured is she's in the process of dying, is the idea. You know what's interesting about this too, and it's worth noting, a lot of times with these healings, we're not told a lot. Now, the other healing, we're told a little bit more, but still not a ton. Because it's not really the issue of, well, Jesus can heal the measles, or he can heal Ebola, or he can heal whatever. That's not the issue a lot of times. It's the issue he can heal, period. This is a desperate situation, obviously. And that's all that matters. And so he comes to Jesus. Why? Why would you come to Jesus? Because he expects Jesus is going to heal. That's why he would do this. There's something else, and it's not really listed here. But why does he want him to come to the house? Because the detail that's mentioned in the Gospel of Mark is to lay his hands on her, to touch her. Because there were numerous times Jesus would do that for his healing. But as we will see, it's not always the case. It's just, to us, that's fascinating. There's another important detail that's in here in these first three verses as we open up, and it is the crowds are pressing upon Jesus. They're pushing physically against Jesus. And this is an important detail that will line up with what's going to happen next. I was sitting there thinking about, because I originally had written down as I thought about this, I don't know why it happens in basketball especially, but if you ever see sometimes a huge upset in a basketball game, usually it's the students just run on the court, and the other team hasn't even gotten off, and just to get off, it's like they got to fight their way to get through. Although after this week, my analogy might be all the kids rushing up to get a snow cone. And they're, me. I want blue, I want red, I want both. Where's Zach? Blue or red, what do you think? Both was probably the popular one, right? But it can be overwhelming. And you would say, well, now why would they be this way? I mean, it's kind of like the snow cone analogy, right? Kids think that's what they need when all of a sudden, so they see they're going to hurry up, and it's like all common courtesy goes out the door when it comes to the snow cone. And in a sense, when you're talking about healing, that's considered a need. And so I guarantee you some of that pressing was because there are people that want Jesus' attention because there are some other needs to be healed there as well. But Luke is only telling us about these two. And they're two unique ones, obviously. But, you know, here's the thing is, and going back to that basketball analogy, when you have a huge crowd and you're trying to work your way through it, and maybe in your lifetime you've ever been in a crowd of people trying to get through and walk through, and they seem to be pushing more and more so to get through, it slows you, impedes you from getting very far. If you've ever gone to a festival, whether it's outdoors or whatever, sometimes there's lots of people just trying to work your way through and stay together. It's fun. So this is the picture that you've got. But this is an important detail. Why? Because of what we're going to find out. Because there's an interruption in the crowd. Interruption, by the way, that it's told from the standpoint of a woman. So turn to look at verse 43 and 44. And it says, and a woman who had a hemorrhage for 12 years and could not be healed by anyone came up behind him, that is Jesus, and touched the fringe of his cloak, and immediately her hemorrhage stopped. So we're told about a woman with a problem is in the crowd. She had internal bleeding. We would say some type of, when we talk about internal bleeding, probably menstrual cycle type bleeding. Been going on for 12 years. Can you imagine? Now, here's the thing is, and you have to consider this. Consider again who we're dealing with, what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a primarily Jewish crowd who has reverence for the law to some extent. And if you were to think of Leviticus 15, 25 through 28, now listen to this. Leviticus 15, 25 through 28, and tell me if this woman who's been bleeding for 12 years might have a problem. Listen. It says this. Now, if a woman has a discharge of her blood many days, not at the period of her menstrual impurity, or if she has a discharge beyond that period, all the days of her impure discharge, she shall continue as though in her menstrual impurity she is unclean. Any bed on which she lies all the days of her discharge shall be like her bed at menstruation, and everything on which she sits shall be unclean, like her uncleanness at that time. Likewise, whoever touches them shall be unclean, and shall wash his clothes and bathe in water and be unclean until evening. When she becomes clean from her discharge, she shall count off for herself 7 days, and afterwards she will be clean. Is there going to be a problem with this woman? Well, obviously, for a Jewish woman, this is a problem. You're in a constant state of being ceremonially unclean. This would mean she'd be kept from the synagogue, the temple, of course, because she was unclean. In fact, a particular ruling about the Torah, which is found in the Mishnah and the Sevazin, stated that a woman during her menstrual cycle and anyone who touched her was banished from the community until ritual purification. Now, consider this. Where is she at now? She is in the crowd. Now, that tells us how desperate she is, right? What is not mentioned here, because Luke doesn't really want to say this, because he doesn't want to say it. That's not a good way to put it. He doesn't want to highlight this, because for him, the story doesn't matter. Mark tells us, if we go through the Gospel of Mark, we're not, but he would tell us that she had exhausted all her financial means with many doctors. So evidently she had some financial means and they still weren't helping the problem. Which, ironically, that still happens today with things, right? You can exhaust financial means. So she's got a problem, 12 years. By the way, do you notice something similar when I said 12 years? The little girl's how old? 12 years. Okay. Now let's talk about what happens with this woman. She has a very unusual healing. Well, what's unusual about it? Well, she came up behind Jesus. Well, why would you come up behind Jesus? Because you don't want to be spotted. And what does she do? She obviously believes that Jesus will heal. So what does she do? She reaches out and touches him, and specifically the way it's stated. She touched the fringe of his garment, his cloak. So it wasn't even, you couldn't even say he touched skin, or it was just the clothing that was on Jesus. Now, here's the thing, and this is one point I want to put out before we talk about the result, which we just read about. If you're a doubting Thomas, and you're going to this extent of, by the way, what is the fear if you get caught and people know you're unclean and you're out in public and you're a woman? You say, oh, well, people are going to... No, they're not going to be nice. You're assuming way too much for our culture. Well, actually, maybe for our culture, we've seen this. There are certain things that are no-no and people will get raked over the coals for it. So we shouldn't be surprised. She's taking a huge risk in being out within public, being unclean, if she gets spotted. So she's super secretive to do this. You are not a doubting Thomas if you're going to go do this. You are set, if you will, in your mind, this is going to happen. So I need to go do this. Whatever means, I'm sneaking up, I'm getting right in there so I can touch Jesus. And then what happens? The bleeding, it says, stopped. Immediately. You know, it's interesting. Jesus doesn't kind of help people get a little better, helps them get over the symptoms. He heals. Every time he does it, he heals. So, well, the fact that there's a story here tells us we know what happened. Because this wasn't going to stop. I mean, if you were reading this for the first time ever, and I only gave you these sentences, your first question, well, how do we know this really happened if she was so secret? Well, because it didn't stay a secret, did it? Let's look at verse 45 and 46. It says, "And Jesus said, 'Who is the one who touched me?' And while they were all denying it, Peter said, 'Master, the people are crowding and pressing in on you.' But Jesus said, 'Someone did touch me, for I was aware that power had gone out of me.'" So Jesus asked a question. He's aware that someone touched him, and he asked the crowd of people who had just touched him. And I think it's interesting because it's very obvious in the response by, well, it really wasn't just one person, there were several. But, you know, the funny thing is, poor Peter is always the one gets highlighted. Because he's probably the first one to say it, but Gospel of Mark said it wasn't just him, there were others that asked him that. In fact, the comments were even like, well, we're walking through a crowd of people. It's kind of like, how many people are touching you? There's all kinds. I think it's the irony is people denying, oh, I didn't do it. Maybe thinking they're in trouble. And it is this kind of, there's a bit of sarcasm in the response because Peter and the other disciples are obviously saying, well, of course people are touching you. What? How do you want to answer that question? Because they're unaware of what he means. Maybe they think, hey, he's upset because somebody bumped into me. That's a crowd. That's going to happen. But this is not, and Jesus further explains himself why he asked that question, right? He says that someone touched him in a manner that was supernatural. It wasn't about brushing up. It was power had gone out. So he's fully aware of what happened. Now, here's the thing, and we'll get into this because of the way Jesus responds to the woman. But you might, if you're not really thinking clearly and reading the context, you might say, oh, well, Jesus is like this thing that we can just, person we can touch him. We'll get the power from him and everything. He's like the electrical plug, you know. That's not what happens. In fact, the fact that Jesus is aware, I believe, and this is speculation, but I also believe he was aware there was someone needy who reached out and touched him. It wasn't just like, oh, well, kind of feel lightheaded. I kind of feel like power left me. I think there's more to it than that. I think it has to do with he was aware of someone that was really needy. See, this is the unique thing is Jesus was fully human. So all the limitations of humanity, and yet still he was fully divine, fully God. In fact, it's interesting. That's a very difficult concept. Julie was telling me about meeting with a girl who struggled with that concept, right? Because Julie was explaining that Jesus is God. No, he's a man. God's God. No, he's fully God, too. That concept, and by the way, it is a difficult concept if you think about it, unless you understand the full picture that God sent his son through this miraculous birth, where Jesus could take on humanity and still have deity. So at some point in time, and this is the thing is, and I could ask everyone who's had biblical training, can you define that? And your answer would be, good luck. Because we also would say we affirm what everyone does is those two natures don't intermingle, but we affirm they're both present in Jesus. Fully God, fully man. One doesn't overpower the other. So there are times we read this and it's like that's in his divinity, he understands what's going on. But it doesn't, by the way, take away any of his humanity either. So I want to bring that up because this is what's going on. I believe he's fully aware that someone has reached out and he has responded to that. And I think it's important, too, because he can say and know fully when he talks to the woman. But he's not a talisman. He's not an idol. He's not a good luck charm. That is not Jesus. So then Jesus, in a response, look at verses 47, 48, clears things up. Starting in verse 7, 47, says, when the woman saw that she had not escaped notice. He was looking right at her. She knew she was had, right? She came trembling and fell down before him and declared in the presence of all the people the reason why she had touched him and how she had been healed, immediately healed. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. So the woman is exposed and confesses. Which, by the way, for her to do that means she's now told everyone also that she was unclean at one point in time. But the woman realized Jesus had spotted her, and she reacted in both fear and reverence, I believe. That's how we would make sense of trembling and falling down. Her trembling indicates she's aware of who she was dealing with. Her nervousness tells us she didn't know Jesus well enough to understand how he would react, and yet there was also probably some of that nervousness because she was now going to be exposed because she would tell him what happened. She was unclean because she had been bleeding. And she told the whole story. She didn't say, I was bleeding for 7 days. How do we know? Because 12 years. How do you get that fact? You get the fact from the woman explaining this. Now, obviously what it says is she declared in the presence of all the people the reason why she had touched him. So all those details we've read about or what she was telling everyone in front of this crowd of people that were crowding around. But I also believe there's an aspect, too, of falling before Jesus. It's also that position of submitting to his authority. And I think some of that is because she's kind of reacting, did I do something? Maybe I did something wrong. Or maybe there's going to be some consequences. That's probably part of it. And so her confession is a testimony of the power of Jesus and her healing. And it's interesting because she started out, these are private actions that are now made public. They weren't going to be made stay private. They become a public testimony. And you just think about it, this woman has had to suffer in private. She can't go out where all the people are. But we read Jesus' response, and it seems rather simple, but it's not, because of really the depth of what he's really saying. He doesn't reprimand the woman's behavior. There's no consequence. Even if she wasn't supposed to be around people, remember, Jesus is what kind of priest? The high priest. The, capital T-H-E. He is the high priest. But what he does is he makes explicitly clear that her faith in him to heal was what happened. It was not the touch. So this is where I draw my conclusion that Jesus was aware it was about the faith. Well, you can say, well, he could observe the action, sure, but I believe it's greater than that. I believe it has more to do with why he understands, is he understands a woman is touching him that has faith to be healed. The other thing, do you notice how she was addressed? What kind of language is that? If I use the word daughter, what would you expect? It's a family term, right? Only we're not talking about the physical family. What are we talking about? Spiritual family. Well, she's part of Jesus' spiritual family. So her faith wasn't just that Jesus was a healer. I believe the faith is also pointing to the fact, I've got to fly, I know. It's just going to bother me until I kill it. We might have to put a disclaimer on Facebook for violence to flies. I believe this is an issue of salvation too, that she is trusting that Jesus is the Messiah. Howard Marshall, I don't know what the I is, so I just call him Howard Marshall. He did come to our seminary, by the way, and preach to us. And I forget how they referred to him as. But he has a way to elaborate on this that I think is really helpful. He says, Now it is possible for Jesus to assure her that it is her faith that has cured her. She can depart in peace, because that's the kind of that greeting. The peace, though, is God's peace, so that the woman's healing is brought directly into relationship with his blessing, and not left to be understood as some due to some magical power residing in Jesus. It's about a relationship, and that's, we use the term daughter and everything else. See, Jesus is not healing just for the sake of healing. He's healing for the sake of talking about who he is. He's fulfilling prophecy, but also it's really about true salvation. I mean, it's easy to say, but every person that Jesus healed has died now. Because there's a greater healing that has to take place in every human being. And that is their healing from their sin. That mars them for God's judgment in the future. So some takeaways before then we stopped in the middle of going to Jairus' house. Well, first of all, Jesus demonstrates what? He's got power and ability to do things when all the experts, think of all the money that was spent. What would that tell you if all the money that was spent isn't working and she simply comes up behind Jesus and touches him? It tells you he's the one who's got the real authority. Number two, it's important for Jesus that the woman wasn't just healed physically. That was the reason for him to say, "Who touched me?" That's the reason to find the woman and make it clear publicly. Connect the reality that faith in Jesus is what matters. And that's also why it's not just faith in Jesus as a healer, but as the Messiah. That's the point of her address being addressed as daughter. And you know, this is my pet peeve, and I've heard it, and I, to the day I die, I will not like this term. And some Christian organizations refer to this. They'll say, we're faith-based. Do you realize by saying that term, Muslims will say, we're faith-based too. That tells me nothing. Your faith based in what? Yourself? You trust in yourself? Tell me what your faith is in. To me, that's trying to, for Christian organizations that do it, to be honest with you, I think it's a way to soft pedal it. Maybe it's I get in my 50s, I become more like my dad. And just say things, I don't know. Or somebody say, no, that's been you always. But, I mean, if it's about Christ, then just say it up front. If it's about Christ, then that's really your object. So don't leave people guessing, well, we're a faith-based organization. Okay. Still doesn't really tell me. Because, by the way, when I've seen specifically Christians who I'm pretty sure they're giving a testimony, oftentimes they don't want to offend, so they're going to use faith. It's their faith. Faith, 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 faith. People are fine using the word faith. That's not offensive. You know that? What is offensive? Jesus. Absolutely. You don't think so? I'm sure I'm speaking to the choir, right? Talk with somebody you don't know very well and just use the word Jesus and see what happens. But people need to know it's about Jesus. This is why we're here. We're ambassadors for who? For faith? We're ambassadors for Christ. People need to believe in the name of Jesus, not in their own faith. So the third takeaway, and then we'll get to, now we'll jump back in and find out what's going on with Jairus, because you're wondering what he's thinking, right? But if I'm trying to make a connection for those of us who are believers, we can be like the woman when it comes to presenting our needs to Jesus. What do I mean? Are we afraid that there will be consequences for seeking help from God for anything? Are there some things we're like, well, I don't know if I should bother God for that? Now, see, these are the things, if we're being honest, there are things we would wrestle with. Well, I probably shouldn't bother God about that. I mean, we do it with human beings. So I have no doubt we do it. And I'm speaking for myself, but I have no doubt we probably do that for God as well. I probably shouldn't bother God for that. Is there a problem maybe in our comfort level with knowing Jesus and how dependent we're supposed to be? Why is prayer part of... do you think God knows our mind? Does He know what our thoughts are? The answer would be yes. So why do we have prayer? The simple answer, I believe, is to teach us dependency and trust on God. You can't build up your dependency and trust in God and not have a prayer life. You can't do it. And so then it becomes, okay, why are we not praying or bringing these things? And maybe it's just our comfort level. How dependent are we on God for these things? How dependent are we? Are we comfortable enough asking for whatever? Do we have that level of comfort knowing Him? Again, maybe you're there. That's great. Or maybe God's taking you to that place where I'm learning more and more dependency. But I think that's one of the things that I think is legitimate. Because look what happened with Jesus and the woman. Jesus comforted her, assured her it was about her faith, called her daughter. But she was doing this all in secret because she was afraid she was going to get in trouble. I want to be healed, but I'm afraid to ask. I'm afraid to be out in front. What could happen? So meanwhile, Jairus is probably looking at this wondering, what is going on? Because I'm going to ask you, if that's your 12-year-old daughter, Lee, and you're stopped, yes, there's a woman, yes, I understand it's been affecting her, but that's your 12-year-old daughter that's dying. Are you going to be exactly happy about everything going on as your daughter is sitting there dying? I mean, I'm just speaking as a dad. I don't think I would. I'd be like, my daughter's dying. Come on, let's go. I'm already getting frustrated. We can't get to the house. And evidently, she must be bad enough that it's like, hey, whether it's 5 minutes or 10 minutes, That can make a huge difference. I mean, why do you think it's important for an ambulance or EMTs to get to the scene as fast as they can to perform life-saving matters? So certainly with Jesus, it would be important in one sense in the mind that we would think maybe to get there as quick as can. So here's what happens. 49 to 50, put yourself in the shoes, by the way, of the dad. We're never told, by the way, of his reaction, and I think maybe there's a reason for it. I think in one sense we kind of would know what it'd be like, right? So in verse 49 it says, while Jesus was still speaking, someone came from the house of the synagogue official saying, your daughter has died. Do not trouble the teacher anymore. But when Jesus heard this, he answered him, do not be afraid any longer, only believe, and she will be made well. So can you imagine you were delayed and you get news, your daughter died? Are you going to be upset? Now, what do you notice, too, about this person that came up and talked to Jairus and told the news? There's something unique about him that tells you, to some extent, his belief about Jesus. What do you see? Calls him teacher. Not Lord. Which could be just be used respectful, not Messiah. So he's kind of like, just leave him alone. And in one sense, maybe you, without reading into it too much, it could be, hey, this is not going to work. So what's unique, though, is with this difficult timing, Jesus responds, though, to him. But I want you to think about this. Even though it's not said, I can't imagine what Jairus felt when he hears the news. He's number one, he's sat and he'd been delayed and they're looking and, you know, they're trying to go. And it's kind of like, well, I guess we got to walk over here, try to get, you know, weave our way through the crowd. And then we got to stop because someone's touched Jesus and he's watched someone get healed or testify about it. And then somehow other people come to the group and say, don't bother. Now, I don't know how quickly it happened, but your daughter's dead. And at this point, I could only assume you would be crushed. And I'm thinking, if that were me, if I would say, if we hadn't stopped to interact with a woman, my daughter could have been healed. I mean, let's be honest. When you see others happen, you kind of like get jealous about that. Well, why did we? It was just, he could have taken care of that later. She wasn't going to die. And as I try to stop and think, how could this relate to any situation with us? There are times when we have asked or will ask in the future the Lord to intervene, and it doesn't happen in the manner or the timing that we want. It's not, by the way, the only time. We read about, as well, about the death of a man that Jesus actually waited on purpose for him to die. And you think, how does this happen? But do you think, so does the timing always fit where we think it should fit? And the answer would be no. Now, after the news, I can only imagine discouraged frustration. Well, maybe the Lord, maybe his agenda was not concerned about my daughter. Maybe that's not important in the grand scheme of things. We could start asking ourselves things. And so here's the thing is, on your phone, by the way, this is a plug. If you don't have Echo app, please get it on your phone because it's a great way. If you need me to explain it to you after church service, let me know. We will get you on there because it's a great way to find out all the prayer requests when they get updated. But there's plenty of prayer requests that are in there that, to me, are serious enough we need to pray about, right? So all the people that have are part of those prayer requests, there may be concern like, this is a serious situation. Why, Lord? Why is this timing? Why is this going on? Just as legitimate as we might say, why this timing? What's going on? And we've taught you about this before, God. We've prayed about it. But that doesn't have to be the total story. Because we know it isn't. Because as I started to allude to, Jesus responds to the situation by calling Jairus to faith. So Jesus, notice his first response is, do not be afraid of the news. In fact, the way it's phrased, cease being afraid. Stop being afraid. You know what? Do you see another analogy? Do you see another comparison? Something else? Stop. In the earlier healing. Immediately stop. The bleeding. Okay. So we're seeing points of connection, right? And then the second command is to believe Jesus will make her well. The command is, by the way, a call to believe Jesus will do what he's going to do. So the connection between these two events, they're different issues, is faith in Jesus, as we've been talking about. So then we get to actually getting to Jairus' house. And so in verse 51, it says, when Jesus came to the house, he did not allow anyone to enter with him except Peter and John and James and the girl's father and mother. Now, they were all weeping and lamenting for her. But he said, stop weeping, for she has not died, but is asleep. And they began laughing at him, knowing that she had died. So, first of all, when Jesus arrives at the house, we're very clear, he doesn't want anyone to come in. This is not to be a big public spectacle. So he's got these intimate three who get to be with him at different unique times within Jesus' ministry. And do you think the crowd continued to follow Jesus if they were that packed? Of course they did. But he probably said, you guys come in, everyone else, and probably told the disciples, make sure no one else tries to come in. Keep them out of the house. This is not a public spectacle. This is not what this is for. So when they enter in the house, Jesus addresses those who are grieving. Now here's the thing is, this would seem odd if you were to say, if I were to walk in, and you know, it would be weird, if I were to walk in and say something, let's say at a wake, or let's say the viewing the night before a funeral, and I were to just walk up the casket and say, well, Fred over here, he's just sleeping. Now, people's reaction, if they're truly grieving, what would it be? They might be mad. They might say, shut up, get out of here. They wouldn't start laughing if they're truly grieving. So you got to ask, well, what's going on here? Well, you have to understand the culture. And it was custom to hire professional mourners. In fact, the Mishnah Ketuboth, probably pronounced that wrong, that's all right, says even the poorest person in Israel should hire not less than two flutes and one wailing woman. That sounds funny, doesn't it? Wailing woman. And this wailing would be accompanied with this flute music, clapping of hands, and so I am sure, being the leader of the synagogue now, he probably had some mourners on hand if this happened while he was gone to get Jesus. Since his daughter obviously was close enough to death. So they arrive, and the mourning has started by the professional mourners. So are they really grieving? Probably not. That's why they could immediately turn from their, quote, grieving to laughing. The thing is, it's interesting that Luke doesn't want to focus on this. Mark does. He kicks them out. They start laughing. Get out. You're not needed here any longer. Why? One is you could say, well, he's just you know, taking names, he's John Wayne. Part of it is, what he's going to do, there's no reason to have mourners for. Leave. You're not needed here anymore. And then we see these last three verses, this incredible miracle. It says, Jesus, however, took, so we kind of jump right into being where the girl is. He took her by the hand and called, saying, Child, arise! And her spirit returned, and she got up immediately, and he gave orders for something to be given her to eat. Her parents were amazed, but he instructed them to tell no one what had happened. So when Jesus goes in to see the girl, he heals her, grabs her by the hand, tells her to arise. Immediately, life comes back. Which, there's so many miracles in and of that self. Because we talk about when people stop breathing for how many minutes, even brain damage that can happen. So the fact that not only she could return to life and breathe, but she's able to listen and respond and do things tells you this is truly incredible. She came back from the dead, basically. And the other thing is, and this is a small thing, but normally touching a dead person by grabbing the hand would render a person unclean for 7 days, but this is Jesus, and he overcame death with his power. And so she arises, so she's not dead. And Mark tells us he speaks, the Gospel of Mark does, an Aramaic phrase to her. This probably was done to point up that others would hear this, that when Jesus spoke this to arise, it was not a magical phrase. He was just saying to get up. But also you could say that kind of is a precursor for Christ when he would rise from the dead. And she didn't just take a breath, she got up and walked. Quite a recovery. And the parents that witnessed it were astonished. Now, did they know what was going on? Yeah, they did. They came into the room. They believed Jesus. By the way, was faith present in this event? Yes, it was. Because why would Jairus have Jesus continue on to the house if they said she was dead, if he didn't believe something could happen? And the call to faith was right away by Jesus. But the thing that's different, so in the case of the woman, what did she do? She spoke in front of a lot of people. What happened? In fact, could you say Jesus maybe encouraged that? I think he did, because he asked her about it. He could have said, or he could have tried to address her privately. He did it in a very public manner. This one, though, is different, right? Don't tell anyone else. Because this is not what he is here for. So the most obvious answer to keeping this quiet is Jesus is not a traveling show for healing. His job is really to tell people about being the Messiah. He's to bring people into the kingdom of God. That's the great miracle that he wants people to focus on. He was already having trouble anyway with crowds. And then at some point in his ministry, he has to totally withdraw because it becomes difficult because people are just clamoring to him for their different reasons, obviously, to be healed. So what about this one? So there's similarities, faith, right? But there's differences. Daryl Bach, as I was looking through his commentary, he focuses on the issue of faith. He says, Jesus has taught a major lesson. Faith means understanding that Jesus has the power to deliver life, and that his timing and sovereignty can be respected. And I think that's the key. It's not just that he has the power, but also it's his timing and that he has control over all events. And that's why he does it the way he does it. So how does that relate to us when we talk about this application in our world? See, if I were to take a poll, for those who profess Christ, I pretty much would guarantee you, every one of you would say that are truly believers would say, yes, Jesus has all the power at his disposal to affect anything that happens today. I don't think that's a problem with people here. Or people that are not here, right? It's not a matter of if God is able. I think the problem is Do I trust when and how He will use that power? That's another level of trust. Because we can look at the situation. Now, how does this relate to what we've been talking about? Timing. I go on Echo App and I see a lot of prayers that involve timing. Why now? Why this? Why? Why can't it be different, God? And the only thing we can do, we don't understand it, is a level of trust in our daily walk with the Lord that we have to trust that He understands things. And that is the part of, you know, we talk about, well, when you know, we come to faith in Jesus Christ, it's about faith, but we don't emphasize enough, yes, we're saved, our relationship cannot be taken away if we're truly a believer, but that the level of trust has to continue. Because now it is about a relationship of trust. I have to trust Him when things aren't adding up. They don't make sense. This is not something, and we can say, you know, God wouldn't like this either. I don't like it. But do we trust Him to work in His timing? That, my brothers and sisters in Christ, is the real tough one. But that's what our walk with the Lord is about. And I think this is, in a sense, what we learn is, this woman, by the way, had to wait 12 years. In one sense, you could say, yeah, the child died, but Jesus raised her back. It didn't last a long time. This woman had longer grief. This man did, and the mother was there with him. But it is still, the issue is, so if I circle the big word, it would be faith, I think. Not only faith to be saved and forgiven of her sins, but faith in Him in general. And you know, every time we read in the Bible and we see these commands about how we're supposed to live, what we're supposed to do, it is about, do we really trust? Do we believe Him in that? Because I promise you, each and every one of us, if we're honest, can find certain areas where, well, I know we're supposed to do this. Do I really trust them to do this?